welcome to another episode of Healthy Minds. My name is Julie, and I'm your host. I've got two guests with me today. Can you both introduce yourselves?
My name is Mimi.
I'm Sasha.
So, Mimi, can you tell me more about who you are and what you do?
So, I am a clinical social worker, a registered play therapist, and a certified trauma professional, meaning I have had extensive training in both working with children ages 4 to 11 and working in trauma. I have a private practice in Columbia, Lighthouse Center for Therapy and Play. And contrary to the name, we actually do work with children and adults.
Okay. And Mimi, what's one food you cannot live without?
Bacon. And it cannot be turkey bacon. It has to be real bacon.
Okay. Great. So, Sasha, who are you and what are you doing?
Hi. I work at a fancy grocery store. I'm working on publishing my first book, and I'm an art student at HCC, and I also have anxiety.
So, Sasha, if you had to pick a celebrity to be your best friend, who would it be?
Ellen DeGeneres.
Great. Thank you, Sasha. I would like to introduce myself. So I know I said earlier my name's Julie, so surprise, my name is Julie. I previously had introduced myself as the outreach and education specialist with Humanum, but sadly I've moved to another job, although still a happy occasion, of course. So Humanum has contracted me to do some work with them, and part of that is this podcast. So I'm still going to be your host for a little while. My new job is deputy director of the consumer quality team, and it's really fun. So essentially what we do is we go into hospitals, day programs, any kind of behavioral health service that receives funding from the state, and we interview with the consumers and we ask them, how's it going, etc. And we take their exact words and we report it up to multiple levels. So to the immediate unit staff or immediate supervisors there at the program. We take it to the CEO of that program. We take it to the county and we take it to the state. So it's actually really exciting. And it gives people a chance to share their experience with a lot of different people in a new format. So that's pretty exciting. So let me clarify that Mimi is our guest expert today as a wonderfully knowledgeable clinician, and Sasha is our guest with lived experience. And we're going to hop into today's topic. You might have guessed from earlier, or if you tuned in last time, you'll know that today we are talking about anxiety. We are going to delve into the world of anxiety in all its different formats and also ways to help. So, Mimi, let's start off with an easy one here. What is anxiety?
So, Julie, anxiety is an emotion. It's characterized by feelings of tension, worried thoughts, and physical changes. It typically causes really severe, persistent, exhausting, and demoralizing feelings. And it also can include panic attacks.
So we're actually going to talk about panic attacks separately and a little bit later. But let's start with the basics here. So, Sasha, what is anxiety to you?
When I have anxiety, I'm in consistent worry, and I feel like it's overwhelmingly powerful. I can't really think correctly, and I'm just really, really nervous.
Okay, so let's take a look at this from a macro level.
So anxiety disorders are the most common mental illness in the United States. It affects about 40 million adults ages 18 and older, or about 18.1% of the population each year.
And did you know that anxiety disorders are highly treatable, yet only a third of people diagnosed with anxiety actually seek treatment for it?
Wow.
It's not uncommon for someone with an anxiety disorder to also suffer from depression or vice versa. Nearly one half of those diagnosed with depression are also diagnosed with an anxiety disorder.
I'm one of those numbers. My primary diagnosis is depression, but I also have anxiety.
So, Sasha, that's not unusual. Unfortunately, what happens in diagnosing is when you're a clinician, you always have to, you go with the most prevalent occurrence. So sometimes we'll diagnose an anxiety disorder and then later on we'll diagnose some depression or some ADHD, just depending on the presentation.
And anecdotally, from working the direct care field, we typically see a lot of teenage girls diagnosed with bipolar disorder. But in fact, as time goes on, we see that it's really a better fit of anxiety and depression.
So I think one of the things in diagnosing is you have to consider insurance companies. But one of my pet peeves is a diagnosis of bipolar disorder when it's either generalized anxiety or PTSD. I mean, I think that happens because when you diagnose bipolar disorder, there has to be at least one episode of mania. And a lot of times there's no episode of mania. It will look like panic or it will look like anxiety. And so then that the bipolar disorder diagnosis comes through.
When I was 14, I was diagnosed with OCD, PTSD, generalized anxiety disorder, and depression. When I was 16, or I might have been 17, I was diagnosed with reactive attachment disorder. But I couldn't be diagnosed with borderline personality disorder until I was 18 because it's an adult diagnosis.
Yes. And so many programs, kind of like Mimi shared, including therapy or psychiatry or even like healthy transitions, have something called a medical necessity criteria, which is a fancy way of saying that the insurances or grant funding or whoever's paying for the services will not pay unless the person receiving services has a certain type of label. It's unfortunate and sometimes requires clinicians to be a little creative, we'll say, in giving a label or a diagnosis in order to get the person the help that they need.
That is so correct.
We're going to get back to the topic at hand here, anxiety. So Mimi, can you walk us through some of the major anxiety disorders?
Sure. So the first one we'll talk about is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. It's a mental health disorder in which people have unwanted repeated thoughts, feelings, ideas, and sensations, which are considered obsessions, and then the behaviors that drive them to do something over and over, which are considered compulsions. So often the person carries out the behaviors to get rid of the obsessive thoughts. It's not being obsessed with organizing things and having them in their place necessarily. So a lot of people right now are misdiagnosing themselves, saying that they have OCD because they like things a particular way. A person with OCD actually cannot move forward until something happens. So if they feel like they've left the stove on and they have to recheck the stove 4 or 5 times before they can leave out of the house, that's what they have to do in order to be able to move to leave out of the house. That's very different than wanting things to be organized and in their place.
Right. And that could be extremely stigmatizing and even belittling to somebody that actually experiences OCD to have someone flippantly say, oh, I'm so OCD, as they shuffle some papers together. Instead, like Mimi said, you're organized, you're fastidious, you're meticulous.
Or particular.
Or picky. Right? So generalized anxiety disorder is much more than the normal anxiety people experience every day. It's chronic and its sufferers experience severe worry and tension, often without provocation. The disorder involves anticipating disaster, often worrying excessively about health or money or family. And again, it affects about 40 million adults in the United States.
Yeah. And so, Sasha, can you share a little bit about your personal experience with generalized anxiety disorder?
Yes. I get a rapid heart rate. My palms get all sweaty. My memory is horrible. As I said earlier, I can't really think correctly. Can't really get out what I'm trying to express in words. I can't really say what it is.
Okay. And, you know, I'm going to ask a really quick question, if you don't mind. So earlier, Mimi shared that it's not often triggered by anything. Would you agree that you're just kind of sitting there and it wallops you out of nowhere?
Yeah, sometimes there is a trigger, but most of the time, I really don't know what the issue is. Yeah, sometimes I'll be going to hang out with a friend and I'll just have one right before and I have no idea what's causing it.
So probably the most focused on by general public, especially prevalent amongst veterans, is post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. It's a mental health condition that's triggered by a terrifying event, either experiencing it or witnessing it. So some of the symptoms include flashbacks, nightmares, severe anxiety, as well as uncontrollable thoughts about the event.
So let's talk about trauma. So you're a certified trauma specialist. What does that mean?
So to become a certified trauma specialist, I've taken about 12 to 18 hours of extended training in addition to the regular training for my licensing. And I have to participate in supervision. And then every 2 years, I have to complete 10 to 15 hours of training that are specifically related to traumas. And they can be different types of traumas and they can be in different ages.
Okay, so I feel like this is kind of a new movement in the behavioral health world. We're hearing a lot of buzzwords about trauma-informed care or triggers or, you know, that kind of whole framework. So can you talk to us about that?
Yep. So, Julie, trauma-informed care, it's a strength-based framework that's responsive to the impact of trauma. It emphasizes physical, psychological, and emotional safety for both service providers and survivors, and it creates opportunities for survivors to rebuild a sense of control and empowerment.
Right. So, can we define trauma?
That's a good question since we're talking about what it is, right? Trauma is an emotional response to a terrible event like an accident, a rape, or a natural disaster. It's not limited to just these events, but can sometimes be quote unquote minor, such as a child experiencing a divorce or a person witnessing domestic violence or a murder. Trauma and anxiety are linked very closely together because the person that experiences a trauma will most likely experience significant symptoms of PTSD or some other physiological or psychological symptoms.
Okay, so let's talk about this pretty famous study that's maybe the even like impetus of this new focus in the behavioral health world of the ACE study. So can you tell us a little bit about it? So first, what is ACE and what does it mean?
Sure. So ACE is actually, it's Adverse Childhood Experiences. It is a 10-question, pretty easy, very easily worded assessment tool that a clinician can use to assess trauma in a person experienced before the ages of 18. So it addresses adult clients, but with events that happened before they became an adult. It was actually funded and completed by Kaiser Permanente and the CDC in Atlanta.
Great. So can you give me maybe like an example of a question that they ask or just a theme?
Yep. So there's a theme of family relationships. So one of the things is, was there a parent in the home or an adult in the home that drank excessively or that used drugs excessively?
Okay.
Right.
So it's about 10 questions that kind of ask around those themes and assesses somebody for the adverse childhood experiences, right, which could translate into traumatic experiences.
Correct.
And so I think we should also note that trauma is different. So if I was a child of a divorce and you were a child of divorce, we would both experience that really differently because it has different impacts on us.
Absolutely. So traumas are, they are very subjective, right? So it really, and every person who experiences something that would be classified as traumatic does not necessarily have a traumatic reaction to it.
Right. And I think there's also like a cool down period after. So
yes.
Maybe about a month, I think I've heard.
Yep. Yeah. Yes, a lot of times. So a lot of times if it still is bringing up such intense emotions, then, obviously you need to seek some help for that.
Okay. Yep. Great. Thank you.
Sure.
So we're going to do a quick shout out to my favorite phone number. those of you that have listened before and followed my directions, you don't need to pull out your phone. But everybody else, please pull out your phones. We're going to put the suicide hotline in there. So again, the name is kind of a misnomer. It is really just a place for somebody to talk to somebody. And so 1-800-273-8255, 1-800-273-8255, or as Sasha says,
TALK.
Yeah, so it's 1-800-273-TALK. So, of course, we gave you the hotline. I'm going to give you my favorite text number now, too, which is 741-741. And again, that's a text line. You can text in and say, hey, hi, how's it going? And somebody will get back to you. And it's a way to talk if perhaps you're not up for talking or, maybe you're in a situation where you can't talk out loud. And so it's a really great way to get support. It is a little longer, of course, because it's volunteer run. And so there's not as much staffing. And so sometimes it can take quite a while for somebody to get it back to you, which can be problematic if you're really experiencing a crisis. So I do recommend the hotline number for more emergent issues. But then the text line is really great if you're kind of just before crisis stage. There's also this really cool app that Grassroots has put out called There Is Hope. You can look that up in your Play Store or the Apple Store, and you can download it. It's pretty small. On there, it actually walks you through questions to ask somebody experiencing a crisis. So it can be used for yourself, a friend, a family member. If you're a teacher that's listening, it does have an option for teachers. And if anything pops up that's yes, if you're testing positive for crises, it gives you the line to the hotline, and then you just boop it right in the app and it calls. So that's pretty great. It is more suicide focused than anxiety focused, but as we know, suicide is still a risk with those experiencing intense anxiety. Sometimes they want to just feel the relief, essentially, from their anxiety. Okay. So let's talk about panic attacks since we're talking about crisis.
Okay. Yeah. So a panic attack is actually an episode of severe anxiety. It's accompanied by physical symptoms such as shortness of breath, racing heart, sweating, dizziness, nausea, trembling, feelings of unreality, or almost like you're floating in a bubble.
I've had way too many panic attacks. When I have them, my heart rate and my blood pressure go shooting up. It feels close to a heart attack without that bad part of a heart attack. And then sometimes I tend to pass out, and it's hard to, like, after it happens, like, you don't really remember it. It just, you remember you're really out of the sorts, and you weren't really connected to reality.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I've heard from some other clinicians that there might be a difference about anxiety attack or panic attack, and that an anxiety attack is, like, maybe a precursor to panic attacks.
So clinically, there's really no difference. So, and I hate to contradict other professionals, so I don't want to do that. However, in the DSM-5, there is no anxiety attack necessarily. A panic attack and I think anxiety attack are interchangeable. I think a lot of people interchange the phrase, but a panic attack is the result of having some intense anxiety. And so people, I think, interchange the phrases quite frequently.
Yeah, and, you know, I think I heard somewhere that a regular adult can just have, like, one panic attack in their life.
And never have another.
Right.
Yeah, and it's a pretty scary thing when you are experiencing that, I think, because you don't know it. So at 51, because I'm a, you know, real grown up now, you don't know if it's a heart attack or if you're really just having a panic attack. Like, I have a really big fear of bridges. Mm-hmm. Right. And so going across that Bay Bridge when I have to go to the other side of Maryland. So, it, you know, sometimes I'm not sure what that is going on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So let's take a quick PSA to talk about the difference between a panic attack and a heart attack.
Sure.
So as far as the layperson, so the average person listening, there is no difference. Call 911 because you just don't want to mess with that.
Right.
If you happen to be a licensed professional listening, you, of course, follow your normal standard procedures. But the problem is that they look so very similar. Heart pain, feelings of doom, inability to orient to time or place. They might not be able to talk. They're hunched over with pain. And so that can be really tricky. So don't take chances. Just call 911. The only caveat to this is if you perhaps know the individual and you can ask them, have you had panic attacks before? If they're able to answer you. And then you need to ask, is anything different about this one? Because there have been cases of anxiety attacks triggering heart attacks. So you just don't want to mess with that. And you want to make sure the person gets the help that they need. So let me share about a panic attack that I witnessed in another one of our young ladies in the Healthy Transitions program who had recently been a victim of sexual assault about a month prior. And so I knew about it. And during our intake questions, I could have probably been a little more sensitive and waited. But unfortunately, I triggered a panic attack in another person. And so I was asking her during our intake if she had been experiencing any signs of trauma reactions. So essentially, have you had nightmares? Have you constantly been on alert? Have you felt disconnected from activities? And, you know, I was scribbling and writing, and I realized she hadn't said anything for a little bit. So I looked up and I noticed that she was staring behind me at kind of nothing. And so I asked if she was okay, and she immediately crumbled. And so, being a mental health professional and knowing her history, I asked her if she was able to tell me if she was having a panic attack. She nodded. I asked if anything was different. She shook her head. And so I realized that I was going to go into, like, anxiety care versus calling 911. So her signs were she was hyperventilating. She was hunched over in pain, like curled up in her chair, crying and not really able to talk, but was able to, like, nod or shake her head. And so that was kind of scary to watch, too.
So I'm sure that you went low and slow and tried some grounding techniques.
So, yes, I started by asking if she could look at me in a very quiet, calm, low, slow voice. I asked if she'd like to try some breathing exercises with me. She nodded, and so we did breathe in, breathe out, to a count of three, which controlled some of her hyperventilation. We did that for probably a minute or two. And then we did our grounding technique of either 5-4-3-2-1 or 3-2-1.
So one of the grounding techniques I really like is 3-2-1. So you can identify, tell me three things that you see, touch two things, and then tell me one positive thing that's happened to you this week.
And that really helps orient them back to time and place. Mimi shared that sometimes feels like you're floating or, you know, you're not really able to tell what's going on because your fight or flight is just so activated that you can't say, I don't know, here I am, I'm sitting in this chair. So by making them touch the chair, they're able to say, oh, I am sitting in this chair. So the whole experience with this young lady, it took a while to decompress and work through it. It took probably like 15 or 20 minutes or so to go through the whole cycle, which feels really long for both the person experiencing it and any bystanders that are kind of like connected to this individual. So her actual panic attack, like the core of it, was probably about 3 or 4 minutes. And it definitely followed a bell curve of warning sign, build up, crisis, and cool down. So like I shared, I noticed that something was wrong because she was staring off. I accidentally pushed it into the escalation phase and then watched the crisis phase and brought her down to cool down. So it was definitely a learning experience in my early days of direct care. And now I'm pretty careful about when I ask about trauma.
So, Julie, panic attacks can be a part of most anxiety disorders. They're not necessarily trauma-related, though oftentimes in addressing traumas, they do bring on panic attacks.
Right. And, you know, it's not necessarily the big trauma thing. So I've seen a panic attack because of a spider.
Right. So phobias are a type of anxiety disorder, and they're defined by a persistent and excessive fear of an object or situation. Usually the person has phobias to a number of objects or situations, right? So they can be divided into specific phobias, social phobia, agoraphobia, which actually the fear of open spaces or going outside.
Yeah, or arachnophobia, the fear of spiders.
Perfect.
So our last big category is?
Social anxiety. Right. And so social anxiety is literally the fear of social situations that involve interactions with other people. And you could say social anxiety is the fear or anxiety of being negatively judged or evaluated by other people. So it's a pervasive disorder and it causes anxiety and fear in most areas of a person's life.
It seems like everyone on the internet experiences some social anxiety.
So there are a lot of memes out there that have something to do with anxiety, and it really makes us feel like we're not alone and we can just laugh about it.
So in your personal experience, you like the memes?
I like the memes. I think they're funny and I can relate to them. And it's just like a positive look on how anxiety can affect you. But it's also, it's honestly really true what they say. I think it's funny at that moment, but like, it's great to know that you're not alone.
Great. So thank you to Sasha for sharing and also to Mimi for that extensive walkthrough of our probably most common anxiety disorders. I think someone out there might be listening and realize that you may resonate with some of these descriptions. So, you know, first, if you're really resonating, you know, seek help. But second, anxiety is part of life. So, for instance, like Sasha shared, she's not so alone. And like we've talked about, I don't actually love calling new places to order food. Like I get really anxious about that. And I'm pretty sure that Mimi here would probably not diagnose me with social anxiety, but rather say it's probably more normal life.
Absolutely. So anxiety is a part of life. It's just like highs and lows and everything else. But like all behavioral health conditions, right, you just have to make sure that your daily life and your daily functioning are not being impacted to the point of either limitation or debilitation. If you're impacted to the point where you cannot function like you normally would or have, then that's when you really need to seek professional help.
Right. So, Sasha, can you talk to us a little bit about maybe your journey and how it impacted you and when you knew that you needed to go get help?
Yeah, so I was going to school. It was like my first year of college, and I was also working at the same time. I was having a lot of trouble concentrating, focusing, and I couldn't talk to my boss. Like, I was hard to communicate with them. I was consistently worrying about everything. Honestly, I was scared to go home. I was scared about a lot of different things that really weren't something to be scared of.
Okay, so what worked for you? You're doing really well. You've got like 3/4 time work. You are a student and you know you're out on your own. So that's excellent. So what's worked for you or what's working for you to treat your anxiety?
What's worked for me a lot is one of the biggest things for me right now is my creative outlet, which is when I write my poems and I do my art. And then I read a lot. Of course, I do my ABC charts. I go to therapy twice a week. I used to go once a week, but I needed more support, so now I do it twice a week. I go to psychiatry, and then, of course, I go to the HT programs and workshops.
Okay, so Mimi, what does science say works best for anxiety?
So there are so many treatment modalities that can be effectively used, depending on the type of anxiety, if there's trauma involved, and other mitigating circumstances, right? So the most popular treatment modality for treating anxiety is CBT, or cognitive behavioral therapy, which simply means if you change your thoughts, you can change your behaviors, and then the impact of your daily functioning will be reduced.
So, Sasha, you mentioned ABC charts. Can you actually explain that a little bit? Because that's part of CBT. We're going to give you the whole alphabet soup today. Sorry.
ABC. So there's the antecedent, which is what triggers what the trigger was. And then there's the behavior, how you react to the trigger. And then there's the consequent, which is what's going to happen because of the way you reacted. And an example of this is, so I would go out, I would spend a lot of money. And then because I spent a lot of money, because I was depressed or whatever, or had an anxiety, I would be broke.
Yeah. So in this B and C, what's your A, though?
My A would be my anxiety or my depression. Mm-hmm. So because of that, I thought retail therapy would help me, but I ended up spending too much money. So my consequence would be that I didn't have enough money for what I actually needed.
Okay, so that's an excellent example of like a tool of cognitive behavioral therapy. Is there anything else that you want to add about CBT, Sasha?
I remember doing a bunch of worksheets that helped me. I was there's groups that do it. I was in the therapy group that did it. It helps a lot.
Perfect. Okay. So what do you wish people knew about having anxiety?
What I wish people would know is that even though a person may be diagnosed with anxiety or have anxiety, that doesn't mean that they're not able to function at work or school or can't live life as a quote-unquote normal human being. They can still do that. They just might need a little extra help. Like they might need medication or they might need to do some therapy. They might need to do their ABC charts. But other than that, they can still go to work. They can still go to school. It's just all about how you cope with it. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any recommendations for friends or general people about how to like help someone with anxiety?
The biggest thing you can do is you can listen. You can listen to how they feel, and then from there you can just give them some resources. I know I have a bunch of cards and numbers and resources and stuff like that.
Okay. Anything to add, Mimi?
No, she did great. Okay. That's perfect.
So it's time to wrap up then. So we're going to do our famous, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but our famous self-care send-off. So Mimi, as our honored guest today, or one of our honored guests today, would you like to challenge us to some self-care? So we've done affirmations. We've done some scheduling time for ourselves. What else would you suggest?
So one of my favorite things to do, and particularly in the spring and summer, because we live in Maryland, is to go for a walk. And not just any walk, but I like to go for a walk and actually find a patch of grass that looks like I can actually take my shoes off and take my shoes off and actually put my feet in the cool grass. Because usually no matter how hot it is outside, the grass is always really cool. So my recommendation for everybody this month is to go for a walk and just take your shoes off and stay and be present where you are.
So, Sasha, do you have your own twist to that?
Yeah, the thing that I would suggest is called riding the wave. So basically, you know how you're at an ocean, there's lots of waves. So basically, the wave would be considered like your anxiety or the problem, the antecedent, whatever you call it. And then surfboards were made to ride that wave. So just imagine that you're on the surfboard so you can always survive the wave, or it'll always end. When it crashes, it's over, and then you can move on.
Okay, great. Thank you so much to both of my lovely guests for their insight, for joining me on this episode all about anxiety. Stay tuned for our next episode, which is going to be psychosis. Have a wonderful week and or month, and don't forget to put your feet in the grass or in the sand. Bye.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.